So anyway, I mean, I gave a talk here during the conference, which was called the quantum correlations and the entanglement of condensed atoms. But this talk will be different. So
it's the amazing one.
So I just say entanglement of condensed atoms. I really, because I'm sort of a minority here, I really want to, you know, emphasize the what is the, you know, bottom line here. Bottom line is the following. You know, we are trying to find some applications of these quantum degenerate gases. And remember, you know, before BEC was made, it was not easy to convince people found a new experiment to do BEC, yes, because, you know, there was this hydrogen experiment that at MIT and also Amsterdam that has been continuously funded for many years. And now Carl Wieman and a few others was interested to say the laser cooling can be used to alkali atoms because alkali atoms are bigger, so have better collisional properties, so you can do BEC. It's not easy. I mean, why? No, the main reason why Carr suggested alkalis is because alkalis has better collision properties, so the whole gas would thermalize quicker because they're larger. I thought this. So it was not easy to convince the funding agencies to give you extra money to do this, yes? So at that time, of course, you tell them that, wow, if they can be made, there would be wonderful things to do. And then mainly at that time, the things they thought would be interesting to do was precision measurement. And I think up to now, we realize this is not going to happen, mainly, I mean, for a very good reason. But it doesn't hurt. So now quantum computing comes alive, yes? So then we can always add on this to say, no, I mean, it's not good for precision measurement. We can do quantum information science. So why, you know, for precision measurement? Well, because when you have condensed gases, somehow you can make a very accurate measurement of some phases, yes? And why it hasn't really worked, for instance, you can go from a coherent state, the phase sensitivity would be going from 1 over square root of n, this is the total particle being detected, to some very strongly correlated state, like in the Heisenberg interferometry limit. Yes, this is the Heisenberg limit. If you had maximum entangled state, you can make the sensitivity up to 1 over n. Yes, basically, it says some kind of phase, for instance, like these relative phases between amplitudes, can be measured very precisely. Why this hasn't occurred for BEC, in fact, it's very easy to understand. First, in order to condense atoms, you actually threw away a lot of atoms. So you start with a thermal gas of atoms, yes? People typically get now these days up to 10 to the 10th atoms to start with. And in the end, you get a million. So you already threw away a lot of them. And if you see the parity non-conservation measurement, you know, of on cesium, Carl Wieman, which had this lab for more than 10 years now, he finally decided he's not going to do the extra step, is that these are experiments that involve a tremendous amount of spin-polarized cesium atoms coming through. So they just need to have a lot of atoms to get this noise done. Now, if you make a condensate, you actually threw away a lot of them. Okay.
Wow.
They were getting 10 to the 12 atoms per second. This is the flux.
10 to the 6 still has 10 to the 3 enhancements.
Yeah, but you can. The problem is to go from this step to that step, actually interactions sort of kill you. And in fact, there are a few other things. You know, these are the details I could, we could go on. I think this is the main reason why it really does not seem likely to work.
But suppose in France they were able to make this atom laser could go through the whole room. But then suppose I have an unlimited amount of a long beam with this continuous beam, then you're in business?
Oh yeah, then you would be in business. For instance, a simple experiment I would suggest to do would be putting across the E B field, then do the 1S to 2S state photo association cipher. Because you know from 1S to 2S state, you cannot make the dipole transitions. But if you can flip E and you define a coordinate system with crossed E and electric and B field, yes. If there is a parity non-conservation amplitude, then 1S to 2S state would be interfered with normalized, you know, stock shifted 2P state. Then you would be able to do this. I mean, I think this is a number, is a real point here. Now, I'm pretty sure if eventually somebody is going to make a high flux atom lasers, then a lot of these things can be done. It's just not going to happen.
So 1 over N is for coherent atoms?
For coherent atoms, like a condenser. Yeah. Yeah, like if you have a condensate, or in fact, it only requires internal coherence, not necessarily spatial coherence. For instance, in atomic clocks, it's 1 over N because internally they are coherent when they make the random sweep transitions. But, you know, spatial coherence, of course, better because you can do other things, yes? And for quantum information physics, we really want to be in the opposite limit. So we want N fluctuations to be very, very small. Okay, so this is a Mott state. That's why after Mott state has been, you know, realized, people are becoming very interested in this. Is now, you really want to like use the atoms rather than the mode of the atoms. You know, you want to use the atoms itself using its internal degrees of freedom to code the coherent amplitudes. So this is a, you know, these are the things that people normally talk about, yes. Why, you know, this is from 1 over square root of n to 1 over n, why it is important. Well, it's essentially because you want to make some measurement of relative phases. So if you have the internal correlation, then this phase simply becomes n times larger, which reduces the noise, yes. And you can also look at it from other perspective. When you look at the phases, you want to look at some kind of you know, vector which is rotating. Yes, you want to see how much angle it has rotated. Now, if I write this vector as a total spin, for instance, there are many, many of these spin half atoms which are participating, yes? So this is, gives me a collective signal. So this is a collective spin. I simply add this spin up. If there is no correlation between these individual spins, then there's some area because quantum, you know, state, would this for each spin 1/2, it was have projection noises along this direction because it cannot be a point. Yes, it has some area. So if these are uncorrelated spins, you simply add them up, and you get this kind of a large uncertainty. Basically, when you measure the angles, this is your uncertainty. Now, you in this case, you really would like to have a spin squeezed state instead of squeezed this way. You want to squeeze that area this way, yes? Well, if this were electromagnetic field for bosons, if you want to make a detection of the atom number detection, yes? Well, many experiments, the atom number measurement is never going to be more sensitive than 10%. If you want to make a 1 over square root n accuracy, then you want it to squeeze in this way. Because when you measure the number, you basically measure the intensity, modulus of this, and the noise would be done. So why now we are doing these things with Bose condensed gases? The idea is very, very simple, is that in the Bose condensed gases, first it has the interactions, and especially in the two-component case, like pseudo-spin 1/2 systems. Whenever you have interactions, it's universal because that's the only type of interactions possible can be generated. And most important is because of the following, that we can use Raman, use single particle interactions. I can couple these two states. I either use microwave or use Raman transitions. And once I have these single particle couplings, I can rotate whatever your interaction, which can be on any axis, I can rotate it to any axis you want. So this is really the key point. I think both gases, I believe, you know, we are close to...
What is that built in order anymore?
Well, this is a very, very good point. Why this is better than ordinary NMR? First, in the ordinary NMR, we are talking about ensemble of atoms. right? And what you really would like to do is like compare this system with a single molecule in your liquid AMR. Because that ensemble, yeah, it does not allow you to access single copy information, basically. It's a thermal average. And then you compare with a single molecular. For instance, there are a lot of efforts right going on, then it's essentially the same. I think the ordinary AMR is just because it's an ensemble measurement. You cannot access the Hilbert space of all these individual two-level systems of a molecular.
I mean, all the spatial correspondence, right, is that the spatial state is, by definition,
Yeah, this is a very, very important point. In fact, there's a lot of debate right now. Probably you guys haven't been involved in this. You know, nuclear magnetic resonance ensemble-based quantum computing was the first actually to be demonstrated in this country seriously. In fact, now if you consider the largest factorization that has been done is also with NMR.
With high probability.
But since 2 years ago, basically within this country, the fundings for all these experiments has been sort of stopped. This is mainly because of several pioneering work, in particular the work from Carl Cave's group and Samuel Bronstein. What they have shown is that in AMR systems, you have this scaling problem, yes? So AMR, because you have these individual copies of molecules, yes, which are in thermal state, so you can never, if each of them contains n two-level state, then the Hilbert space is like that, yes? You can never access the Hilbert space of this quantum information. All you can access is a joint state here, which to first order is identity. It's plus some small variations. These are called the pseudo-pure state. These guys have very, very poor scaling properties because they're corresponding to a polarization that is given by the finite temperature. It's a temperature splitting between spin up and spin down. So that means they cannot be scaled. But in the Bose condensed gases, I mean, we can access all the states. Basically, I have a pure state.
N is still only the number of states for a single atom.
N would be the...
The whole point about Bose condensate, surely. Let's consider a Bose condensate of between spin and half.
Yes.
Yes. By definition, the Bose condensed state has the spatial wave function exactly the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Therefore, the spin state must be exactly similar.
Yes. Now, let me answer your question. Basically, I needed to use quantum gases, yes? But I will not access necessarily the condensate as you talked about. That means every one of them in the single orbitals. In fact, what we want is this strongly correlated state. For instance, I will show you, yes, a strongly correlated state, which may be just a superposition of different condensates or fragmented condensates in the simplest, in the lowest order approximation, yes? So that means I can access more spatial orbitals than just a pure, Gross-Piotrowski wave function itself. I can still have Bose condensation. For instance, this is a good point. Remember, in the conference I talked about the generating superposition of a condensate up and down, yes?
Yeah.
So in that state, you have two independent spatial orbitals, but they are identical because for ferromagnetic condensate, a spin-polarized condensate plus the amplitude of completely spin down, they are identical. In particle, they are just identical spatial orbitals, yes?
Okay.
But that state now allows me to access a relative phase between them, which is proportional to n particles involved. So these are the states we want to do, yes? In fact, there's a more serious problem. So I think I will say a little bit, then I will quit.
What I'm saying is you've now got a very, very nice qubit, but you have to use n.
Yeah. But this is what I said that at the beginning. And the idea is we really still want to use atoms as a qubit rather than a mode. Rather than a mode, because if we use a mode, as you said, clearly we're going to have used many, many atoms for one mode, yes? But we can still do the atoms, and if you do it in a way that still hopefully can be realized in the experiment. So
you can
I will say something about this. So in fact, a more serious problem arises here is that the following, that both condensed gases, in fact, they do not give you a Hilbert space of 2 to the n anyway, because it's only the symmetrical part. Yes? So that's already quite small. And so what we have been doing, is on this particular direction, is trying to characterize the small amount of systems that contains a few particles. For instance, find if I have two bosons, I allow many, many special modes. What are their correlations? For two distinguishable particles, this is very well understood because this is Schmidt decomposition. Some of you may not be so familiar with that. Basically, if I have two identical particles two distinguishable particles, if you give me any wave function, I can immediately tell you what is the amount of correlation between them. All right? This is a very well understood, and let me just do a simple example, then you will know what I mean. So if I have two particles, so I can certainly find the basis. Yes, phi I is the basis of particle A. Phi j is the basis of particle B. Yes, so my wave function is going to be like that. All right. So if I give you this wave function, if I want to ask you, are they correlated or entangled? How do you know?
What is correlated and what is not?
Correlated or entangled means whether this wave function can be written as some arbitrary wave function of A times some arbitrary wave function of B. Yes. So this could be some superposition of this arbitrary superposition. This could be some superposition of that. Yes. Whether they are separable. That means whether they are local. For two pure states, this is very easy to know because we know single value decomposition. This is a matrix. Any matrix can be written as two orthogonal matrix times a diagonal matrix. This diagonal matrix is of dimension that is the smallest of this dimension of these two. So I would be going from 1 to m a, and j would be going 1 to m b. Yes, then this guy would have a dimension which is a minimum of m a and m b. So that means now this is just a transformation of basis on this particle, and this is the transformation basis on that particle. So that means this wave function can always be written involving one summation and involving a dk, and then involving some state k. Yes? So if since this is unique, if this has only one diagonal element, then you know that it is not entangled. Yes? These calculations are pretty difficult to calculate because, as you can see, when the system becomes larger, it's a linear algebra calculation. But for two pure states, we know that. For three pure states, we know within certain limit how these things would work. But we know for a fact for three pure state, for three particles, the pure state, for instance, the summation cannot never be written collapsed down to one summation index, no matter how you change the basis. In some special cases, this can be done. But in general, this has been proven. And Now, for mixed state, it's more complicated. So today, I will not go into the mixed state. I just will show you the pure state, what we can do. Yes?
So what's the condition to have factorized state in terms of this
state? Well, if this D is of rank 1, you can, oh, this is single value decomposition. You can always do that. If this D is of rank 1, then, yeah, any 1K, yeah.
How is connected with
the von Neumann entropy? Well, von Neumann entropy is that just the entropy of the modulus or probability distribution of this. So basically, you define. Yeah, you define this ki squared logarithmic ki. And this is. All right. Basically.
Should it be 0 or 1?
Well, if it's 1, then it's 0.
I think you need
sum of
d sub k squared.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. D sub k, yeah.
D sub k,
sum over k, yeah. All right. So the first thing that actually needs to be done is for condensed gases or quantum gases, bosons or fermions, in fact, is to figure out what you should do this for within the symmetric or anti-symmetric state, all right? For fermions, this has been done. In fact, the first work was done by Alan McDonald's group, but I will not tell you what it looks like. This is fermions. But for bosons, here's what it happens.
What exactly is the question you're trying to answer?
What?
What exactly is the question you're trying to answer?
Oh, I'm trying to answer how to characterize these small number of bosons. How to characterize their states, and then how to generate them. In
question, what do you mean by characterize it? So you have a definition of entanglement in this form.
Yeah.
And then you that is what you mean by characterize.
Yeah, because.
And then your question is suppose I have two bosons, how am I going to use it, things of this form?
Yeah, things of this of how to generate in both condensed gases.
You are not going to talk about anything more than two bosons.
No, I will talk about three, not more than three. But I want to set this stage up. For instance, recently, Emmanuel Bloch, yes, Ted Hensch's group, they created this two boson GHZ state, yes?
Two bosons.
Yeah, two bosons in each. Well, they were created within this multi-insulator. So in the multi-insulator, when they have two bosons within this same wells, they would, by moving it, generate this GHZ state. Yes, but the two boson GHZ state is not the same as the GHZ, two boson maximum entangled state, actually. It's a Bell state, yes. Yeah, but this state we always call, this is always called the GHZ state, called NGHZ, depending on how many N you have here. So when n GHZ, n equal to 2, this state, this is one of the Bell state, yes, of course. So if this n is very, very large, it's called n GHZ state, all right? For instance, Emmanuel Bloch, when he started together with, very recently, this time was, he talked about, I think in this conference, he did not talk about it, but last year, when he was still in Munich in the Hensch's group, they were the first to generate with high fidelity this GHZ of n equal to 2, this Bell state, yes? Do you remember? Yes, EPR state. I say 2 GHZ state, yeah.
GHZ is three particle in this.
Yeah.
Actually, people like in generating these states with. Oh, okay,
with atoms. Well, not only with atoms, yeah. But also generating them in large amount, yes, in these multi-insulator states. Yeah. So that, well, all these Innsbruck with parametric non-convergence, these are conditional on the coincidence measurement, yes. So that means you don't see them.
I think Emmanuel Bloch's case is actually not that clean cut because he's sliding the whole chain of that.
Well, but it's a clean cut. I mean, it is really a clean cut.
Well, it's all right. I'm just quoting him. I'm not talking about my opinion.
Uh-huh.
He would not agree that. Well, certainly his data are consistent with just sticking to particle, and then that's how he actually present all his results. But then But then come down to the gas team, so look, I actually have a lack of some things, and he said yes.
It is a pretty clean cut, because this interaction, as we tell you, that it's exactly one of the one we proposed, for instance, doing NGHD 2 years ago.
Let's discuss it later.
Yeah, we can discuss this later. So I'm just going to tell you how, in this case, if I have, instead of two distinguishable states, if I have two bosons, how should I characterize the amount of correlations between these two particles in this state? They are certainly less. We know for a fact that they are going to be less than if they were distinguishable particles, because for two bosons, you would not be able to do the local measurement. Because when you do a measurement, you always do it on the two bosons instead of individual bosons, yes? Normally, why Bale states like this contains enough...
I think it may sound mysterious. I think if you state your problem in a mathematical form, then I think it would be much clearer. So the question, what is the problem you want to solve?
Yeah, this is the problem is...
Mathematical turn out in words, just saying, here's a problem. If I want to calculate the single particle density matrix 2000, let's say for bosons,
no.
These are all the correlation functions that we know of. N particle density matrices. Are there other things besides N particle density matrices? Is that what comes down to, or what?
No.
Okay. Then what is the problem
one to
solve?
Well, the problem that we want to solve is to characterize the amount of entanglement.
Yeah. How do you characterize amount?
In bosonic systems containing small number of bosons.
Yes.
You have observables that you are going to measure or calculate, that's basically like what Jason is saying. Do you have characteristics that you can measure your observables?
Measurables,
and then you say, what's the problem with calculating that?
What is the mathematical problem you propose?
There's no mathematical problem. Here it's a physics problem.
Okay.
Yes.
The physics problem
is giving you of a system of several bosons, giving you that you know these interactions, you can control them. What is the most interesting protocol you can develop that is useful for quantum information science? Yes, that is related to quantum information.
It depends on what task that you want to achieve.
Yeah, this is what I'm going to tell you, yes?
Okay,
because if we know that, this is the BCS transition temperature we want to calculate, then it's a hard problem, but conceptually it's very easy. Yes, you just go ahead, use whatever tools you have, you try to calculate. Here is that you have to identify in this system what kind of correlations are there, and then what are these correlations used for. I mean, it's not just a mathematical formula.
No.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't mean but let's say, since we're talking about two bosons, three bosons are relatively simple, especially two bosons. If they're the two objects, they're identical, then only state I can construct a set of Bell states, period.
That's not true. This is what I'm going to show you. We have this proof here. Yes.
Okay, so because we still don't know what you want to do this on.
I thought this would be, it's sort of clear, to me, what I want to do is I want to characterize all the correlations here. Then with these correlations, I can tell you what I can do.
Okay, continue.
Yes.
Maybe when you proceed, it'll be clearer.
Yeah. So for instance, for two bosons, if I have two bosons, yes, and each of these bosons would have a certain single particle orbitals, yes? They are distinguishable. If they are distinguishable, then we know how to do that there, despite the fact that single particle orbitals are the same, but the orbitals would come in for single particles with their own coordinates. But now if I have identical bosons, so now I can still have single particle orbitals. We may not be able to solve them if there were interactions. But here's what I will show you, that what is the compact form, the analog of this, basically for two bosons, all right?
Well, Gibbs, we have to use the simple transit expression. Is that right?
What?
Well, Gibbs, we have to use the simple transit expression. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. What you do is that you immediately realize that for two bosons, because this has to be symmetric with respect to change of index, so that means these two has to be the same. All right? So that means the most compact wave function for two bosons actually is the following. So this is a single mode. These are independent modes. So I can have two bosons in this state, first mode, plus two bosons in the second mode, plus two bosons in the third mode. That means if I have this particular state, that means one boson in first mode, one boson in the second mode. This wave function can always be converted in terms of this wave function by making the basis transformation, single particle basis transformation, all right?
I'm just trying to see what you want to achieve. That's all. So I agree with what you say, but then what do I want to? So what basically? Okay, suppose.
Oh wow! Because.
So, do this form explicitly for the case of two spin a half bosons. Are you saying that, because now I know my states, I've got an S equals plus 1, S equals 0, S equals minus 1. Are you saying that any arbitrary little combination of those can always be in that state?
Yes, but this is not for spin half boson. This is just for arbitrary.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
I'm going to consider the spin half boson.
Yeah.
I think I'll be happy with the general case.
Yeah, this is a general case. If you have two bosons, all the bosonic wave functions can be written like this. If you have two bosons, this is the exact statement.
Well, so he's, for example, this state would be equals to a squared minus b squared, where a is a1, b1 plus b2, b is a1
yeah.
minus b2. So you don't have to make it. You don't have to make it so general and so abstract. Basically, here is that is all there is, and then this one I can make it into some differences, and therefore for this particular case.
Yeah, for this particular case. Yeah. But for all the cases that involve in two bosons, the wave function is of this form. All right.
Yeah. So you say, and this is what you call as a what? This is the way that the analog is reached the composition.
Yes.
And
because then, once I know this, I know what I can do.
If you have a pure state, then you only have one term. If you have anything that's more than one term, then they call it.
Then I call that entangled state.
That is an analog of that.
That is the analog of that. All right. Yeah. Is that okay with everybody?
Yes, I know what you want to say, but
is that okay? So, I mean, once you know this, then you know the dynamics. Give me a coupling. I immediately can see that when these amplitudes would be there or when these amplitudes would be not there. So now, I will go on to three bosons, all right?
Yeah.
In fact, for the fermionic cases, this is well known. Because when we do the atomic this is not a two-state, yes, because each single particle orbital could be infinite many.
Okay.
And when we do the helium structure calculations, how do we expand the two particle wave function of the two electrons? We expand them in terms of independent Schrödinger determinants. So that was a result basically from Alan McDonald's group. They said for two fermionic wave functions, that wave function can always be written as superposition of independent slate.
It's actually the first, that theorem is actually in C.A. Yang's paper of Jacqueline Long and
George. Yeah, I know that, but I didn't have anything to do with that. So now what I want to do, why this is important, because if you do this in this basis, you can see how the correlation develops, yes. So now I'm going to do it for three distinguishable qubits. I mean, basically, I want to do this for three bosons, but I want to give you the background, yes, to show you. And you see, this is a very, very difficult task, and many of these things, people are just beginning to understand them. In fact, there's absolutely no experimental system to test these ideas. So I think, as I will show later, that both condensed gases in the Mott state, when you have, you know, internal states of these individual particles in the wells, they can be used to test all of these ideas.
Clear, because it seems to me that what you're trying to do is to find, as it were, interesting characteristics on metaphorical way, trying to identify which kinds of entanglement.
Yes. Yes.
I don't quite see how you experimented. You will see how I do this.
What's the last thing?
I don't see this is about the kind of question which we put to experimental tests.
It's the characteristics, yes. Then I will show you in the condensed atoms what type of interaction can jump between the.
Okay, that's a different question.
Yeah, that will come in because I needed to give you some of this background before we can go on, yes. So for three particles, in general, we don't have this this kind of structure anymore. But we can say definitively for three qubits. That means I restrict the Hilbert space of each of them to two-dimensional, all right? Then in that case, we know that. And this this is actually a very important work. This so this is just the zero and one are spin up spin down state of each of these qubit. Yes, so that means we now know that the generalized Schmidt decomposition or the most economical forms to represent a three particle wave function is this, right?
So you can always find a basis.
You can always find a basis to do it this way. This is the most economical form. You cannot do it less. And this also shows why in general the Hilbert space is full of entangled states. Is that because you look here is how many dimensions. This is a six-dimensional space.
Why do you put a phase vector to the second
number? Well, because you
real?
Yeah, all of them are real except this one.
I see.
So this also shows you why in the general Hilbert space, most of the wave functions are entangled because most of states do not contain all these parameters. Yes.
Any arbitrary three particle state can be written in this form.
Yeah, three qubit state.
Wow.
So do I understand correctly that if I take three particles, yes,
yeah,
that whatever the state is, I can always write it like that.
Yes. No matter what, you can always find this particular basis. This is the most economical. That means if you write down a wave function, you may need to use some extra parameters, all right? But you can always use the basis transformation such that it becomes this form.
Okay. And all the lambdas are real.
All the lambdas are real, all right? Okay. Well,
what's the difference, Liu? What's the difference if I say three particles and if I say three qubits?
Well,
is there any difference?
Yes, three qubits means each particle is two level.
Each particle is
two level.
Yeah.
And then that's this case.
Then for physicists, it's
easier. Yeah. Then it's easy, all right.
What I don't understand that if here there are only six variables.
Yes.
But then if I have a three particles, then I have a coefficient. If I have three indices, so I have two times two, I get eight.
No, you have more than that because that's only factorizable states are two times two. Yes, because you have a lot of states which are not factorizable.
Are they really distinguished?
Because for three particles, what is the total number of bases? That's eight.
That's right.
So yeah, you have seven. No, you can get. I only have six because this is the most economical one.
SU7 transformation.
Okay, never mind. Continue.
What's the difference between the third and fourth term that has lambda 2 and lambda 3? And why don't you have extra term, for example, 0, 1, 1?
Well, okay.
No, he said that they can be rotated. You change the basis.
They can be always rotated to the
into something of this form as well.
So, all right. Yeah.
Continue. Yes.
So now this state, this is the most economical state. As you can see, it's very complicated. Now I want to characterize it to say what are the inseparable correlations. That means. What about that state, which now involves three of them? You know, when they are inseparable into three separate wave functions of each of these individual particles, what types of correlations are there? All right? This problem right now is understood. For three distinguishable qubits, I have two types of correlations. One is this GHZ. the other, this is called a doubly. You can see what is the difference. The difference, these are all the engineer, three-body correlated states. So among all these states, there are many states which are not three-body correlated. You can have AB correlated, but C is not entangled. Or BC correlated, that is A is not entangled. Or AC correlated, B is not entangled, yes? So those are the subspaces which are now getting away. Now I'm looking at within the space where the three particles are all inseparable. And it turns out it's very simple, that there are only two types of the inseparable correlations. One is GHZ type of this type, which is the natural extension of Bell state. The other type is called the W type. What is the difference? The difference is this state is very fragile against the particle loss. If you lose a state, then the other two states are not entangled. Two parties are not entangled anymore.
What do you mean by loss?
Well, you trace, away the one of the particles. Yes. If you trace away one of the particles, you can see this gives you identity. So it's a maximum mixed state. But for this type of correlations, if you trace away one of the particles, the other two remains maximum entangled. All right? So that's the difference between those. This actual work was done by Ignacio Siracchi. So. A couple of years ago.
I mean, presumably those are just, as it were, the extreme cases. You could put in arbitrary coefficients that would have worked, for example, in the same.
No, as a, in fact, if you have a linear superposition of these two, then they all become this through a proper basis transformation.
Yeah, now suppose you take W, okay?
Yeah.
And can't I just multiply second coefficient?
Oh, you mean here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you can do that. But what I mean, these are the extreme cases. Yeah, exactly. But the important point is that this is very well known. It has not been tested, but theoretically we know this. It's not. What? No, you run numerical experiment to test these things. Yes, because maybe I should say this. When I say this, this is a well known, that it's not like a proof. I can prove this, yes? This is under so-called stochastic, local communication, local operations, classical communications. That means you don't know exactly what the operation is to get there. You only know asymptotically, because there could be many, many, many local operations, many, many rounds of classical communications, yes? So it simply knows these two types never cross.
That's not what Tony is asking. What Tony is asking is, what do you mean by experimentally testing? Any of them. I think probably what you mean is that, let me see whether what you mean is that, like, suppose I created it, how
yes.
do I know I actually have this state? Is that what you mean by experimentally testing?
Yeah, that's what I mean. I do not mean how do I test. Oh, yeah, of course. So
what are your operational measurement that is going to distinguish between this state and some other state which has probably closed but probably not?
Yeah, between these states. Yeah, between these two states, this is it's very easy to distinguish between them. This state has a very well defined so-called entanglement witness operator, which are essentially you can measure, do the measurement, do the x basis measurement on three independent particles plus z basis measurement on this. All right. So then you can distinguish between these two. These are. That means you do sigma x measurement.
Yeah. You want to do is distinguish those two states.
Yeah.
And surely you just measure the product of sigma 1, sigma 2, sigma
3. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Can we get even more explicit? Let's take the experiments at Nispolar where they have up to four ions.
Yes.
Which are qubits.
Yes.
Okay, so exactly what do they do with those ions to get these two states?
Well, I guess. In the ion case, they have got it up to four ions here, yes?
Right.
For in that case, they actually do this. What they test is this parity operator. They can immediately test that.
Physically, in that experiment, what do they do to the ions?
Oh, they shine some laser light to the ions, which is equivalent to this interaction we have in two component BEC.
Uh-huh.
So in the two component BC, you know, in the conference I give a talk, I think it's very easy, you know. Well, the experimentalists may not agree.
So, let's see, time is running out, so I think you have to make a strategic decision, and also,
I will try to stop after this transparency, all right? So, because then, if you're interested, we can continue to do this. So basically, what we have done is for the three bosons, yes? I want to find the most canonical form for the three bosons. It's just not making that initial state symmetrically, as you see. So it's a completely different proof from three distinguishable particles. So what I do is I write down the total symmetric basis for three bosons. Yes. Then I make a single particle basis rotation. And it turns out this becomes a very well-known algebraic problem, and there's a theorem for that. And then I can tell you, so three bosons in two modes, the most economical wave function is this form. R, S, T, these are real, and it's a reduction of two parameters, right? You can see, actually, this state is not symmetric.
Sorry, not symmetric?
Not symmetric with respect to the interchange of 0 and 1.
No,
because this one contains only one of the ones. So there's no other states. So basically, what I'm saying is that for three bosons, these four terms, you can make this transformation kill any of these terms. You can get rid of one of the terms, then also compact the coefficient of the other three terms. So this becomes this. And then there are two types of, this is exact. This you do not have to make a local operation, classical communication. You do not have to do statistical classical communications. Here you can just use unitary evolution. That means it involves only Hamiltonian dynamics. And you find these two types, basically depending on whether this coefficient is zero or not, right? And now, I think I want to stop here.
So you say that the, let me understand whether that's what you said. Are you saying that for the three particle case, for the distinguishable and also for the case of bosons, then the problem is also solved in exactly this plot? In the same sense as the two-particle case where you can characterize properly what entanglement means.
For three bosons. Oh,
for three bosons.
Yeah.
How about the three distinguishable particles?
We also know that.
I see, because I thought Chirac said that is not a solved problem yet.
Chirac says three bosons because he doesn't know about this work.
No, not bosons, he got three qubits, three distinguishable ones.
Oh, three distinguishable qubits.
There's no solution at the moment, and then that's what he was.
No, this is his solution. Yes.
How old was that statement?
No, this is.
A month ago, before he left, he gave the talk.
You're sure he was? Sure, he was answering trying to answer a slightly different problem, which is given a density matrix, an arbitrary density matrix, it's just how do you tell whether it is entangled or not?
Unless his definition of entanglement is different from Lee's, he was saying that the talk is about, part of the talk is about characterization of entanglement.
Yeah, but it wasn't a talk about characterizing the entanglement.
Yeah. But it's a mixed state. I think it must be mixed state. He must be working on, because very recently he's been working on three qubit mixed state. So, yeah. So, anyway, now I want to tell you why this is interesting for three bosons. Because in the multi insulating state, in the dense regions of this multi state as created in Munich, yes, I know they have three bosons in a particular well. And these two internal spin states are accessible through Raman transitions. And they have these transition interactions, yes? And I showed you in the conference how these states can be created. And they think they can create this. This is based on what I discussed with them. So now we are trying to understand how this interaction or the change from this type to this type Why this is interesting? Because when you get to this type, you are against the loss. You lose one of these particles, the remaining two remains to be maximum entangled.
Loss prone, but loss only one event.
Loss one, second it will destroy.
You
surely
have to specify something about alpha and beta.
These are linear independent. This we know how they are. We have worked all that out. I mean, I just didn't bother.
That term conserve the z-direction spin, right?
Oh yeah, you need this actually. If this is a z quantization, then this is usually x or y. Yeah, you're right. So these, I mean, there are some stuff we were doing along this direction, but I think everybody is hungry. You know, you can discuss with me, this afternoon or tomorrow. I'm sorry to confuse everybody. All right. So, yeah, this I'm not going to bother. Okay, yeah, let me stop here. So if it's completely unclear, forget.
No, it's clear. It's a very nice talk, and everything is very clear.
Thank you.
I thought you just said that he has succeeded in convincing you.
Yes, but he also has to escape.
Thank you very much, Lee. I really appreciate it. So.